Hello, I'm Joe B. Today is June 16th at Frank's home. I will be interviewing Frank B. This audio recording will be reproduced and remain in the custody of Nassau General Service Archives in the Nassau County, New York area. As such, will not be reproduced for other uses. In the interest of anonymity, we ask that no last names be stated. Do I have your permission to record this interview?
Yes.
So before AA, please tell me a little about your life before you found AA. When and where were you born? What kind of childhood did you have?
So I was born in St. Joseph's Hospital in Far Rockaway. Grew up in Inwood, Long Island, and had a good childhood. Grew up with four brothers. My parents were loving, caring parents, and, you know, it was a middle-class existence that was good.
How did you start drinking?
I started drinking while I was in college. My first drink was probably a little bit before that, but I didn't really start drinking until I was 18, probably. I mean, I do remember being at family parties and having a glass of wine in my hands. But my drinking really kind of took off when I was a sophomore in college.
When and how did your drinking get out of control?
So it continued to get worse. I was in a relationship. It was my first love. And when that fell apart, I fell apart. And alcohol kind of took care of a lot of the uncomfortable feelings associated with that. And I kind of probably put off dealing with the sadness and depression associated with it. So it continued, and it kind of hit a crescendo when I was driving on the Belt Parkway. I kind of passed out. I was 29 years old, and I was in therapy at the time, and the therapist suggested maybe it'd be good to stop drinking. I went to a couple AA meetings, but didn't really continue because I put down the drink for like 3.5 years and was, as we understand, a dry drunk for those years. And what I eventually did was get in a codependent relationship that led me to Al-Anon and then AA, which started my recovery process.
When did you know you had hit bottom?
I knew I hit bottom from the drinking when I, you know, kind of passed out as I was driving on the highway, and thank God nothing happened to me. So I was 29, 30. Turning 30.
When did you first hear of AA, and from what source?
Well, I knew about AA because I was a social worker in the field, and I would refer people, but never really understood that I had a problem.
How and when did you get started in AA? I think you touched on that a question or two ago,
right?
Basically.
Yeah, so basically, I actually started going to Al-Anon first during that period, and that I had abstained for 3.5 years before coming to AA. And when I went to that meeting, people who were in both programs, the ones that were going to AA, came to me and heard my story and said, "You're crazy, you need to go to AA." And so I went to AA and felt comfortable there, but I was going through a rough period when I first started going to AA. I was able to stay abstinent from alcohol, but emotionally I was a wreck, so, and spiritually. So that's what kept me coming back, because I wanted relief from the emotional pain.
When and where did you sober up?
I got sober in Brooklyn, in kind of Flatbush area of Brooklyn, and that was in 1988.
Where did you go to your first meeting and what did you think of it?
Well, my first meeting was in Brooklyn. I thought it was good, but it wasn't something that I could relate to at that point. Then a couple years passed, and then I went back to that meeting because of the emotional and spiritual deprivation that was going on, and that's what kept me coming back.
Can you tell me about your early sobriety, your work through the steps and problems you had in those first days of learning the AA way?
Well, during that period that I started to go to AA in 88, I joined a home group that was the Rogers Group in Brooklyn, and then I took commitments. I was going through a period where I was kind of clinically depressed, but the coffee commitment forced me to get up and out, and it was helpful to kind of interact with the other people there. It was the time in which people were still smoking, and it was, there were a lot of people who were old timers, and we would go out. So there'd be a group of us that would go out and speak. And that was in Manhattan. Well, it was part of Brooklyn intergroup, but the exchange was Westchester. It included like everywhere, in the area. And we would go to Westchester, we'd go to the Bronx, we'd go to Queens and speak at meetings.
Did you have a sponsor when you first came in, and what type of sponsorship did you have?
I had a sponsor, but I never really utilized the sponsor that well. I would call, I would see him at meetings, but I never really went through the steps at that point early in my recovery.
How many groups or meetings were in existence? Do you know how many were?
There were hundreds. In Brooklyn, there were just, meetings everywhere. And then when I came to Long Island, there were meetings everywhere. So,
can you recall the formats used at some of these early meetings? How were they run?
Well, I found myself going to a lot of step meetings. So the way those meetings were, they read a step a week. Someone would speak on it, and then we would go around the room and just have an opportunity to share on it. It was the standard open discussion, closed discussion, beginners meetings, and I kind of hit a variety of different meetings. So,
when was AA started in your town or area, do you recall?
I mean, in Brooklyn, it was there since sometime in the mid-40s. The group that I was with had a banner, and I think it was back in the late 40s.
How often were meetings held?
At that particular group, meetings were held at least 3 times a week, I think it was. And then more recent groups that I've joined, County Seat is once a week, where we have 2 meetings on Sunday. Albertson Group was another group that I was part of, and I think they had 2 meetings a week back then.
Who were some of the people playing important roles in the formation of new groups?
I wasn't really involved in the formation of new groups. I mean, I was instrumental in the transition from County Seat being at Winthrop to County Seat going over to St. Paul's Recreation Center in Garden City. So we went from Mineola to Garden City, and that all transpired as a result of the pandemic.
Really? That's good for the people in that group to know about how that group came to moving from Winthrop Hospital over to St.
Right,
Paul's.
So I'll add to that. So,
sure.
So Winthrop, the county seat group was at Winthrop for over 40 years, and the hospital didn't charge any kind of rent during those years. And they had their meeting on Sunday, and they had one, two, three, four, five meetings every Sunday when I joined, and that was probably 6, 7 years ago. But prior to that, I think they always had at least 4 or 5 meetings, if we speak to some of the members during that time frame, we get a better sense of how often the meeting was or how many meetings there were on a Sunday. But it was always on Sunday, and it was only on Sunday. So at one point, when I came to the group, they Winthrop said that County Seat couldn't use the room for like a month or so. They needed it. So they, as a result of them needing it, the group couldn't meet for like up to 2 months. And we felt that was pretty disruptive. So I found, you know, the space that we're in now, because I felt like it wasn't good that we didn't have a space. So I did all the groundwork. This was at least 3 years, 2 or 3 years before the pandemic. Then the pandemic hits, and being a hospital and a primary care facility, we had to get out of there. So I took all the materials, all the books, all the things that we had for the group, and I put it up in my attic for like 2 years and kept it there. And then the group, a couple of the group members started meeting outside at the gazebo in Williston Park. So every Sunday at, I don't know what time it was, maybe 9 or 10 o'clock, they would meet for, I think it was 9, because our primary meeting's at 9:15, so somewhere around 9. They would meet during the pandemic, you know, and that lasted about a year and a half, you know, that they were meeting there. So then we were talking to each other. I actually started a meeting. It wasn't an official AA meeting, but it was an online meeting with a handful of members, and I used the emotional sobriety book that we have in AA. So I used emotional sobriety 1, and then I also used emotional sobriety 2. So I had that every Sunday for at least a year or so that I ran that during that transition period that, you know, meetings weren't being held. And then once things started to ease up, I went to the people over at the gazebo, and those were some of the core members of County Seat. And I said, do you want me to go over? Do you want me to try to get back into the hospital? Because I had, you know, contacts there. And they said yes. And I explained to them, I contacted the hospital. The hospital said, no, we don't have a space for you any longer. So I said, do you want me to contact St. Paul's? And that was 4.5, almost 3.5 years, and we'll be celebrating our 4th year in September in St. Paul's. So I was able to get permission, made all the arrangements, and then the group started meeting at Panera. We had a group of us meeting at Panera to coordinate things, and then we just started the meeting up again. as the county C group of AA in September 4 years ago.
What else do you know about the growth of AA during that period of time?
It was a difficult period in general for people in recovery, but, you know, during the pandemic, but Zoom boomed. And as a result, we have a whole new entity as part of the AA program.
Which individuals were especially prominent in your sobriety?
Pretty much anybody who was involved in AA and who I became friends with. In recent years, I have a sponsor who we've become good friends, and he took me through the steps. So he was instrumental. Jonathan was instrumental in really kind of guiding me through the steps. He's a master step person, and it was really helpful. And the friends that I've made, the people who have long-term sobriety, like myself, and have been a part of AA all these years, they're influencing me in a positive way.
How were new members contacted?
Again, we put our information, once we moved from the hospital to the St. Paul's, at Nassau Intergroup. So it was listed online.
What kinds of 12-step work were going on?
Service within the group itself. People were committing to take on responsibilities so that the group would thrive. We started with a handful of members, you know, maybe 10 to 12 members, and now we have up to 55, 60 people every Sunday at our close discussion.
Would you tell me about your experiences in sponsoring others?
Yeah, I've been sponsoring two people at this point, and it's really a blessing to see them grow, to be able to take them through the steps, and I get it as much out of it as they do. And someone that I've worked with is going to be celebrating a year next month, which is really nice to see.
We're going to move to the unity part of the oral history, group issues, and community perception of AA. Today, conference-approved literature is available to help AA members deal with a wide variety of challenging questions and experience. How did early AAs treat newcomers?
Well, I mean, what I remember, they were the most important person in the room. And it continues to kind of be that, you know, because when we see people come in, it reminds us of how serious this disease of addiction to alcohol can be. You know, so, and I think in my early years, we had people who were greeters. And that was one of the service responsibilities for the group. We have somebody sitting there now who's a greeter, but we don't have an official greeter for our group. But we also have packets that we give to the newcomer, giving them some telephone numbers to call. And the nice thing about our group is, you know, it's co-ed, and, you know, the women really support each other in a special way, and the guys also do the same thing.
How did your group treat constant slippers, or groups, when you first came in and now?
Yeah, it continues to be an open-ended willingness to accept a person back into the group.
13-steppers. How did your group of groups treat 13-steppers?
We haven't really addressed that I'm aware of. that's pretty much done, I think, with the sponsors, if there is a sponsor. If it gets out of control, then, you know, that's one area that they struggle with, I think, AA struggles with.
How are people wishing to talk about multiple addictions during your meetings addressed? It could be now or in the past when you first came in.
Well, early on, it was discouraged. In recent years, it's accepted. But most people kind of focus on their alcoholism. But, you know, we have multiple programs available for different addictions, and you know, we can direct people to those.
How about non-alcoholic drug addicts walking in off the street for their first meeting in the past, or
they're welcome.
In AA Comes of Age, Bill writes about numerous issues over which anger and contention arose and threatened the undoing of our fellowship. The groups nationwide, for example, did not immediately accept the spiritual principles which we know today as the 12 traditions. What controversies over issues addressed in the traditions can you recall people wrestling with?
Well, anonymity is probably one of the biggest challenges. The whole idea of what does that look like, honoring that, being aware of it, educating people about it. Because a lot of times people aren't even aware. So that's one issue. The issue of anonymity and trust, you know, it's kind of like not letting other people know that they were at an AA meeting. In terms of finances, I think there's always challenges in managing the money and people trusting the guardians of the money, the treasurer. Luckily, we've done well, you know, and we have a good treasurer. We kind of coordinate between myself, who's a chairperson, and we make sure the money gets to the bank. We had to change banks. There was a whole to do with that because of some of the changes in after 9/11 and some other Homeland Security stuff. So we had to kind of open up an account, get a tax ID number, a whole bunch of different things that didn't exist for us when they first opened up the accounts, and we had to move to a different bank.
You actually touched on this one before, but when you first came in, are you familiar with how meeting spaces were acquired and rent paid? You walked us through
So we have to have insurance. You know, we do it on a yearly basis. They've been very good. The city of Garden City has been very good to us, you know, in terms of rent. We're at the point where we do 6 months at a time because it's based on how much money we have available. We want to have some kind of prudent reserve. So
today, AA is well known and supported by police officers, judges, and corrections officials. What kind of relationship did AA in your area have with the local authorities, and how has that changed since you sobered up?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I do know that there are specific groups that focus on supporting firefighters and police officers. You know, I know of groups in Queens and where that's their primary place of support and recovery.
Treatment facilities today frequently host AA and other 12-step meetings. Did treatment centers exist in your area when you first sobered up? And did any of them use a 12-step format or incorporate AA meetings into their structure?
I wasn't aware of it in Brooklyn or Queens. You know, I worked at a facility that provided treatment for those who suffered from addiction. We didn't have a meeting. I knew there were some places that had meetings. For years, there was Long Beach Hospital had an AA meeting. You know, they don't have it. Well, Long Beach Hospital is gone. So, from Sandy, Superstorm Sandy. So.
Today, radio and television public service announcements for AA as well as internet websites are becoming commonplace. When you first got sober, how did AAs interact with the media?
They were aware of the fact that, you know, they would, again, need to maintain the anonymity. So there wasn't really a whole lot of interaction with the media.
Now, actually, you were talking about this before. So, what cautions might you have for young people, for young AAs today regarding media exposure? You were talking about anonymity before.
Well, I think also the issue of social media and what that's like now. There are some websites that support people in recovery, and those individuals, I'm familiar with Friends of Bill W. as a website where people in recovery share their experience, strength, and hope.
During the early years of your recovery, how did the community receive Alcoholics Anonymous?
That was always, I think, accepted. Even at church, they would announce that there were meetings periodically, depending on where I was. But I'm familiar with some individuals that referred or preachers that referred to Alcoholics Anonymous and how it helps individuals.
So that's actually a good segue into this question. Do you think your group has had an influence in your community? If so, how?
I think, in terms of the hospital, when they were involved with the hospital and meetings were at the hospital, it made it easy for individuals who may have detoxed at the hospital or had gotten sick from alcohol-related problems, that they could give them information about the meetings being held at the hospital. Now it's a community-based center that we're at, and Garden City, the village of Garden City, appreciates the fact that we have our meetings there.
We're going to move to the service part of the oral history. This could also encompass service at the group level or below the group level. How and why did you get into service work?
So I had my early years in recovery, and it really kind of helped me personally move out of being depressed, periods of depression. And then I had gone on a yoga and a recovery retreat about 7-8 years ago, and I came back inspired to do service more, kind of like doing it. I was inspired to do service, and I understood the connection between the need to give it away, to keep it.
What contributions did you yourself make to the growth of the fellowship? Obviously, the transition in keeping the Winthrop Hospital meeting, alive and well. Is there anything else you wish to add on to it?
No, I mean, like you said, this has become my baby. Taking on the responsibility to pull people together, to ensure that the meeting flows and that everybody's doing what they can to keep things going well. This past year, when we first started those first 2.5 years, we only had one meeting every Sunday. And then we were able to add a second meeting. So, you know, service really started to grow, you know, and the number of people started to grow. And now we have two meetings on a Sunday, and they're both flourishing. The Living Sober meeting, where they use the Living Sober book, really offers something to both people early in recovery and people in long-term recovery.
What were your impressions of the active AA legacies of recovery, unity, and service?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the foundation of AA. This last year, I had the opportunity to go to Stepping Stones and to the Wilson House. You know, and those traditions and the values of AA permeate those places. You know, unity, service, and recovery, they're all interconnected.
What was your impression of AA Trusted Servants, GSO staff, delegates? Describe your first encounters.
Yeah, well, you know, it was interesting. I tried to start a yoga recovery type meeting, and it was really helpful because I had to contact GSO in Manhattan. There's a specific division that has to do with the written material it's not copyrighted, but it's, you know, like if you want to, you have to get permission to use the
steps and the traditions.
The steps.
Okay.
Or the traditions. But so I was able to contact them and they got back to me and they gave me permission to adapt the 12 steps to that particular program that I was starting. It didn't really take off the way I wanted to, but it was really helpful to get that. The person really explained everything and made it a simple process.
What special occasions do you recall during your time of AA service?
Well, we also have an annual anniversary of when we started the meeting over at St. Paul's. And, you know, it's a special time, you know, and the anniversaries that we have every month are also very special because it shows how the program works. And, you know, we see the joy and the transformation in people's lives.
How has AA changed, if it has, since you first found it?
Well, I think the biggest change is, you know, the fact that we're on Zoom. That the hybrid meeting is also interesting. I have always been drawn to attend meetings wherever I go. So I could be in California, I could be on my honeymoon in Bermuda, so AA has continues to change based on the culture, where it is, what country it's in, what state it's in. You know, my early years in AA, I would go to meetings in Manhattan, and I couldn't believe how, you know, like I remember going to the Mustard Seed, and I couldn't believe how open and honest these people were and talking about real life problems that were pretty serious, you know. And then other groups, you know, I remember flying out to California and being in San Francisco and going to Haight-Ashbury and, you know, going to a meeting where they had fruit and teas and instead of cookies and coffee, you know. So I think it's really evolved. And I think there's just still challenges that they have to contend with. But at the same time, you know, it offers a lot of support to people who really need it.
What challenges do you think?
Challenges, I think the idea of, You can't really control who comes to AA, and the level of problems that some individuals have and how they take advantage of individuals. It could be financial, it could be in terms of sexual relationships. There are some dynamics that take place in meetings that really AA can't have a handle on. But that's not the nature of their purpose. Their primary purpose is to help people stay sober, get sober, and stay sober. But there's a lot of stuff that has to be dealt with.
This concludes the interview. On behalf of Nassau County General Service Archives, we want to thank you for allowing us to record this interview. Your story will now be part of our history.